This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to talk about gardening here in just a moment. First, we're going to check in with Jay Pierce. He is the station manager for AM and FM, WILL AM and FM, and he is the AM program director. And we've got to take care of a little business here this afternoon before we talk with Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland.
It's just a few thousand dollars. It's a little business, right?
Yeah.
This is our February membership drive, as you know. And it's a week that we come to you now in February. We added this last year to let you know how important listener support is for WILL Radio. And I was just, Celeste, thinking about this while I was in the dentist's office over the noon hour having my teeth checked.
Mm.
And, you know, there's not much else to do while they're whirring away. So you start thinking about things, and I was staring up into that light thinking, you know, the goal is $100,000 in this week. And we were just talking about infrastructure, the chief engineer and I. And our FM and TV antenna tower is just about done getting about $600,000 worth of work. In the next year, we'll be replacing the transmitter out there. That's going to be at least $80,000, and there's going to be some more work. And some good news for AM listeners who have trouble hearing us at night as we convert FM to digital, and that opens up an opportunity for those who get digital radios to hear the AM station on the second FM channel. So that's exciting. But that whole project's going to be, somewhere in almost $200,000 range. And then we have the fact that our AM transmitter needs to be upgraded and our antenna system down there, and that needs about $60,000 worth of work. So, you know, these numbers really start adding up. So we talk about the funding that we get in the course of a year. The federal government funding for WILL AM is a little under $250,000. Well, we've already spent like three times that taking care of the infrastructure, thanks to the University of Illinois for helping us out generously with the antenna tower situation. But we're not going to get money for the transmitters and things like that. We have to do that. And that doesn't come from the federal grant that we operate to. Well, we pay for some of the operation on about 18% of our overall budget will come out of that. The University of Illinois, State of Illinois, that's another 27% or so. But, you know, the rest really must come from listeners. And so when we're talking about this, it's not a little bit of money that we're talking about to keep this radio station coming to you. It's microphones for the guests to be on. It's all of the infrastructure that needs to be in place in addition to all of the people who work here and the programs we have to buy. It's an expensive undertaking. Well, and, you know, you just can't underestimate the role that listeners play in the clarity of the signal, our reliability of our signal, improvements we can make.
Yeah. Well, people tune in for the programs, but in order to get the programs on the air, you've got to have the infrastructure.
Yeah, that's what's been going through my mind today. So here's a telephone number, 217-244-9455. And you're helping to provide programs like the one you're going to hear this hour, access to experts here in our community that you can have on a regular basis, and our ability to deliver it to you. 217-244-9455.
And that basic membership of $40 means a lot. 11 cents a day.
Exactly. 11 cents a day. And you know, you might think it's like voting. Oh, my $40. You're just talking about $250,000. But you know what? 7,000 people will be sending in $40, $100, $1,000. And that's what adds up. And it needs to add up to $900,000 by the end of this fiscal year, on June 30th. And it will do it. It's $40, it's $60, 11 cents a day at a time, a dollar a day. Think about that, a dollar a day for what you get from the Afternoon Magazine. My gosh, you know, if you went out and tried to buy all the books that you talk about, if you went out and tried to make phone calls to all of the guests that you have on throughout the year personally, you couldn't do it. There'd be no way to do it. We provide it. You do the reading. You do the research. You come up with the questions, and then we open up the phone lines so listeners can have access to. That's what it's all about. It's discussion. It's access. It's empowerment. It's knowledge. It's fun. And it's all because of listener contributions.
Okay. That number again, 217-244-9455. Jay, thank you very much. Now let's have some fun. Let's talk about gardening. Diane and Chuck are raring to go. They're here dancing in their seats to the music. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today we're going to talk about gardening. We're going to do some dreaming and planning, I think, because it's too early, really, to be
little
out there.
But Jay's got us all pumped up now.
Yeah.
We're ready to go.
Okay. Let me give another telephone number, though, for folks who would like to call in and talk to you after they've made that important call to Pledge Central at 244-9455. Give us a call here on the Afternoon Magazine and talk with Diane and Chuck, 333-9455, the number to call if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area. And one more number anywhere else, you can call the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Diane Noland is the host of WILL-TV's Illinois Gardener, and Chuck Boyd is also with us this afternoon. His gardening interests include herbs and vegetables. So if you've got questions about ornamentals, herbs, vegetables, give us a call this afternoon. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guests. Diane is a teaching assistant in natural resources and environmental sciences at the U of I. She is the co-author of Perennials for the Landscape. Chuck is principal research specialist in agriculture and natural resources and environmental sciences at the U of I, and he is co-author of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. So where are the two of you when you're thinking about the growing season and what you will do when the moment arrives and you can plant?
Well, I know I've already been gardening.
Have you?
Right now, I actually, not planting, but gardening. I call everything outdoors gardening. I have daffodils up a couple inches, and so over the weekend, I mulched. I did a little bit more mulching. I've been moving and spreading mulch. And that's something you don't have time to do when you're planting, it seems. So I'm putting out a new layer of aged wood chips. And so I covered up my daffodils a little bit. Not covered them, but brought mulch up to them. And there's some bare spots in the ground. Not my vegetable garden, but my ornamentals, the trees, shrubs. We've been mulching out from the trees so that we get a good area.
How old are those aged chips?
I like at least 6 months, 6 or 8 months. Some of mine are aged a couple years because I have a lot of them. But good age, so they're not breaking down the nitrogen in the soil, or they're not steaming. They should be at least a half a year aged.
Yeah. I suppose we are seeing the little tops of our spring ornamentals because the weather has been a little on the warm side.
And it won't hurt them,
but
it will keep, the mulch will keep them from really getting unsightly. But it won't hurt them. The flowers are still down in the leaves. It's okay.
Yeah. What if you have like a plant that kind of comes up, I mean like heaves itself out of the ground? What do you do?
The perennial coral bells will do that. And so you have to just kind of make a way so you put the roots back down in, and then you'll want to mulch quite well, 2 inches, 3 inches, but taper it to the plant itself.
Before I ask the same question of you, my friend, Chuck Voigt, let's talk with a listener who's on a cell phone in Urbana. Line one, hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Is it right to plant garlic and get proper bulb formation?
I didn't hear the first part of the question.
Too early?
I was asking if it's too late to plant garlic. I know you're supposed to plant it in the fall and so that the winter can make it divide properly. Is it too late to do that now at this time of the year?
No, it probably won't get as big as it might have if you'd planted it in October. I think it would still go ahead and grow, and it will probably still divide into cloves, but it won't get as big, and so there probably won't be as many cloves, or the ones that you get won't be as large. But it's certainly better to plant it now than not to plant it. And because the season seems to be breaking early, if you have a place that's ready to do that, you can probably gain a lot of time on, if we had to wait till April or whenever it dries out, and you can do all sorts of other things.
Describe how to do it so people will get the right depth and spacing.
Okay. Well, you usually get garlic as a full bulb with nice papery wrappers on it. You take off, break it out of the papery wrappers, trying carefully not to break the skins on the cloves. Plant those 3 or 4 inches deep, and they know what to do from there on.
Yeah.
It's incredible when you put them in moist soil that is above freezing, how quickly they know to just shoot roots out.
Okay. So just 3 or 4 inches deep, that's pretty
easy. I've heard people who talk about planting it up to a foot deep, but that makes me a little nervous.
Because you'd have to find it then.
Well, then that makes your digging job really difficult when you go back to dig it in July or August.
Does a caller want to follow up?
No, thank you very much. I appreciate the advice.
All right. Maybe as that listener turns his radio back up to hear us, maybe you would offer us a couple of your favorite varieties, Chuck, because there are so many.
Well, my two all-time favorites at this point are Spanish Roja, which is a rock and roll type, really good flavor, nice texture, not spectacularly hot or anything. It's a good flavored garlic that always scores well at tastings. And then one called Music, which is a porcelain type that gets really big bulbs with huge cloves. I've had 4-ounce bulbs that only had 6 cloves in them. So,
wow.
Huge. Once you peel one of those, you really got something. Some people would confuse it with elephant garlic, but it's not. It's a full-flavored, true garlic.
Okay. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you have a question about gardening, and the toll-free number anywhere else. You may be listening if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area. The toll-free number is 800-222-WILL. Well, what have you been up to in here in the last couple of weeks? Well, where you like to garden?
Well, general cleanup.
Uh-huh.
It seems like I turn my back and weed trees have come in and suddenly they're 3 or 4 years old, and I could swear I just pulled them all out 6 months ago. So I've been cleaning up a lot of that stuff, because we've been warmer than usual, it's been a little muddy to actually get out and do any cleanup in the vegetable garden. So I've been trying to keep myself busy with other projects. It seems like there's a never-ending supply of things to prune and pull and dig out.
Yeah, this is a good time of the year to do pruning, isn't it?
Oh, it is, because you can see the open silhouette. You can see all those water sprouts going straight up. Get the suckers at the base of the tree. It's a great time to prune. Now, a little bit later on, you're going to get plants that have a little bit more of the sap is running, so to speak, and you don't want to do birches. And really the maples, the sugar maples, will start to run too much. So,
grapes, too. You want to get those pruned
grapes
as early
right
as
now.
Right now. Because the later it gets, the more they'll bleed as well after you cut them. And you cut grapes back so severely that
it really shows.
Yeah.
Also, time to make seed orders or go visit garden. I mean, it's not too early to visit, but don't plant it. You have one nice 60-degree days. People are planting tomatoes. What's up with that? So don't do it.
Don't do it. Okay.
But seed orders, that's fine. And also the real cool crops, getting potatoes and, any of the cruciferae.
We're close to that time, huh?
You can be order. I mean, I ordered mine.
Okay. So and then you just keep them in a cool, dark place until you're ready to go.
Chuck, address that one.
Well, potatoes specifically, you'd want to keep around 40 degrees Fahrenheit, relatively high humidity, in the dark, away from things that produce ethylene, like
apples
onions.
Particularly. Also, you're not supposed to keep onions and potatoes together, I thought.
Okay.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Because it may be the onions sprout more easily, and as they sprout, then they might give off ethylene. That would make some sense.
Mm-hmm.
Ethylene is a sprout enhancer, so you want to keep it out. What else?
And then actually you can plant them in March, can't you, if the weather is okay?
You probably could.
Early April.
Chances are pretty good if you plant them
in
March.
For central Illinois?
For right here. Oh, yes, for right here.
Northern Illinois would be later.
Yeah, I would.
Northern Indiana.
Right.
Right. Coming from northeast Illinois, I would think of April as being a fairly normal time to plant potatoes. If you get them in too early, they come up, they look really lush, and inevitably they get frosted, which probably doesn't hurt them all that much, but it really makes the gardener feel bad to see them go from bright green to cruddy dark brown overnight.
I always have those friends that push the envelope and they put a few out around, you know, in end of March and try to sneak some in. And some years it works great, and then they put the rest of it in later.
So maybe April isn't the cruelest month for gardeners. Maybe it's March. You know, T.S. Eliot, you know, April is the cruelest month.
I think it's March here.
Yeah. Tough on things.
Because even a light snow in April, it's a warm snow by then. It'll melt fast, and and you're still going to get frost. But these are cold crops. Those crops can take a little bit of it.
Yeah, but potatoes started out in the Andes, so I think frost is the thing that they, at least genetically, are programmed to deal with and come back from.
Right.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Afternoon.
Hi there.
Talking of garlic was so apropos. I'm looking at a line of cloves that had been put back in October. Of course, they sent up a nice green shoot. And by this time, if it were any other year, some of them would be blackened. Most of them would be limp on the ground waiting to revive. But they look marvelous, just shockingly marvelous. I've begun actually worrying. As you two look around, have you seen, because of the nice warm January, any plants actually beginning to come out of dormancy? I've seen lots and lots of green iris shoots, and I'm pretty sure they're tough, but I begin to worry when I look around at the trees. Some of the buds, I swear, have started swelling. Is it really troublesome? Have you found anything because of this unusual warmth that's gotten started way too early? I just want to hear what your judgment has seen and compare it to what I have. Thank you.
Well, you're absolutely right about the iris. It's up. And if you haven't cut back your iris from before, you need to get that done. But it's not going to hurt those. It's not going to hurt the bulbs. I do know the buds have expanded on the yews more than I've ever seen in any other year. But I don't think it's going to hurt those. What have you seen, Chuck? Have you seen any?
I haven't seen much of anything.
That's out of the ordinary.
Some of the maple trees and some of those things that normally flower in late winter, it's usually the flower buds that come out first. And worst case scenario, if the flower buds get frozen off, then you don't have a million maple seeds falling out of your tree. So that's not all bad. Mm. Usually the leaf buds are much slower to break, and so it's harder to freeze those off.
So I think it seems really early and things are out. But we will just have to wait and see. I know we're not quite answering your question, but it doesn't look like it's anything that's going to be too stressed.
Yeah.
My hamamelis, the witch hazels, they should be flowering now, and they are, and they look great and smell wonderful. But I haven't really noticed anything else. I do know if it keeps like this, our butterfly bushes are going to be 19 feet tall. So you're going to have to cut those back because I think everything's going to live. Normally they die back. Mm-hmm. So that could be something that you'll have to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Don't let the butterfly bushes will be much taller in Illinois and Indiana if they never died back. So you may have to prune more things. Probably also Russian sage. They won't die back either. So those are sub-shrubs or shrublets, and you'll have to – they're woody, but yet they have top growth that dies back.
The plant that you just mentioned that you have flowering now, that's a witch hazel?
Witch hazel, yes.
Tell us about that plant.
Well, I actually was given this one. It's the cultivar Diana, and it's I don't know why they would give that to me, but it is a reddish color. The witch hazel, I think it's Vernalis, I believe it's the earliest one, but the most showy ones are the yellow. It's a real strappy flower. It usually flowers, I've had them as early as January, but almost always in February, along with my snowdrops. So I have snowdrops and witch hazels in flower right now.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful fragrance. But the red flower of this Diana does not show up very well. There's some of the brown leaves still present, But the yellow ones are gorgeous.
Yeah, and this is the plant you said also has a wonderful fragrance?
Yes, very nice fragrance.
Okay, that's
so I planted a yellow-flowered one last year so I could have those. But it's only about 2 feet tall.
It's so nice to have things that go through the season, you know, really
that's the
early
goal.
To really late.
Yeah, well, and the common witch hazel blooms in late fall, just right before the leaves turn yellow and fall off. So they really have a really interesting flowering season because it's either in the fall when you don't expect things to be blooming or in the late winter when you don't think things should be kicked off and flowering again. And then the flower, like Diane said, the fragrance is always a surprise.
And usually you smell it before you see it, which is really interesting. You'll be in the garden. Yeah.
Is it a sweet fragrance, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, I guess I would say sweet.
Right.
Sweet floral fragrance. I don't know. It's not like a candy fragrance, but sweet floral. And mine is just multi-stemmed, sort of a shrubby-looking plant. It's a tree, but it's a, you know, it won't get extremely tall.
Yeah.
But it's really nice.
Yeah, a couple of things that we planted last fall. One of them that I'm really looking forward to seeing, Lenten Rose.
Oh,
that should be coming up pretty soon.
It should be. And there are two. There's the Helleborus niger, which is the Christmas rose, and it should be flowering soon. And then the Helleborus orientalis, or hybrida, is the one closer to the spring holidays. So it should be coming up.
That's a lovely plant.
March, April.
Never had it before, but found some last year, and so said, I'm taking these.
It was the perennial plant of the year last year,
really?
Which was why I think it was a little more available.
Yes.
I got a catalog, speaking of dreaming, the other day, and it's from somewhere, Randolph, Wisconsin or somewhere, and they actually have 9 different choices in hellebores. It's just shockingly wonderful.
It's great, and there's so many of them. But most places don't carry them. But when it was designated perennial plant of the year, people started asking, and now they're available.
Yeah.
Beautiful evergreen foliage. And by the way, that foliage will start to look a little ratty as the new growth comes up. So it's never without leaves. And I had a lady from farther south get a hold of me and say that hers are almost in full sun. Well, I put mine more in partial shade.
Yeah.
So it has a range more than I even knew.
Well, it's
really
nice to have
flowers.
Something that gives you that foliage and flower in the shade. You know,
yes.
It's nice to know that it will tolerate sunnier conditions, but it's really a harder location to find something for in the shade where it does it.
Yeah, I also like if I can use the word architecture of it, I like the form of it. It's just a gorgeous plant.
Beautiful, mounded, almost has peony-like leaves, very pretty. Never the red, but just that gorgeous.
But sturdier, though, too.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener.
Okay.
Caller in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. I ran across hummingbird mints at the Idea Garden last year, and I liked their appearance and thought they might be attractive to hummingbirds. And I'm wondering what their bloom period is. Oftentimes, with perennials, the bloom period often is not as long as I would like them to be. So can you help me out on that?
Did you happen to write down anything more about it than just hummingbird mint?
Well, it seems to me, I can't find my list, but I'm looking at Bluestone Perennials catalog, and they list Apache Sunset as one of them, and then A. Canna as another one. Seems to be Apache Sunset might have been, that sounds familiar.
Agastaches.
Oh, Agastaches. Oh.
Essep.
Yeah. Okay, that's different then. That's
okay.
A summer blooming plant.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And I would say mine probably over a period July and August. It's not early summer. And I've noticed hummingbirds and a lot of butterflies go to it, but I don't know that it's.
Yeah, like the Anise hyssop. Blooms for a long time, and if you cut some of the early blossoms off, it'll branch and rebloom. And I think many of the Korean version, Rugosa, and some they have a pretty long bloom season, especially if you deadhead and encourage them to keep at it.
And if you use it has that black licorice flavor and scent. And you know, I snip leaves out of the garden and munch on it, so you really can use it culinary.
Yeah, I think Nick Alwart, one of the things he used to do, he'd layer them in like a lasagna and have sort of that licorice under flavor in a lasagna, which I thought sounded kind of interesting. I haven't ever done it, but it sounded like like a good thing.
So what was this plant that you just mentioned?
That's Anis hyssop.
Agastache.
Agastache funiculum.
Funiculum.
Because it has the fennelly flavor.
But you may like the cultivars because it's a shorter habit, or maybe it's for a different flower color, you know, so I wouldn't give that
right.
one up.
Yeah, and even with that one, there's a chartreuse foliage one and a white flowered one and different things.
And they will come up from seed, so if you do not use them, you will need to find a way to use them. Because I have a lot of them, and it just self-sows in with my Love and a Mist all throughout the garden. They're both annuals, but they are perennials in my garden because they self-sow. And that chartreuse leaf is beautiful. It's really nice, but it self-sows also. So you get a little lighter yellow-green in your garden.
I have a monk's hood, one individual, and I like the idea of it because it blooms fairly late in the season.
Right.
When not much else is blooming. And but it oftentimes some of the stems get they die back. They look pretty grotty, and I'm wondering
the actual flower stem.
Yeah.
Well, you could deadhead that. Is it during the flowering time or is it after?
Before.
Before.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I don't know unless it's because it is in a shady location. Is that? You've got in a shady location?
It's not super shady. It's a couple of feet from a tall lilac hedge. So depending on the sun angle, it gets some shade, but it's not full sun all day. It gets partial shade.
Root rot.
Yeah, it sounds like it's either like a fungal, you know, a root rot, and you may want to get that checked out by the plant clinic next year.
Hmm.
Actually have that taken in because it should not do that.
Do you have suggestions on dividing that plant if I wanted to try it in a couple of other locations?
Can you see that there's enough to it that you would be able to pull it apart? I mean, does it have some mass to it?
It's been there for a couple of years now. It's not. Maybe it's fourth. This will maybe be its fourth.
Because it's a very close cousin to delphinium. It may not have enough going on to even divide it. You might try just moving that plant to another spot and then let it see if it's going to do better in another location.
Okay.
But I would say 4 years is maybe not enough to divide it.
Right. And if it is a root rot kind of a thing, if you do move it, I would try to improve the drainage in the soil before you put it in another spot, because usually, especially in this part of the world, drainage can be an issue.
It is in the lowest area of our garden, and if we have saturated soils, and well, if it's frozen and it rains really, really hard, there might be some standing water.
Okay, now
you might want to put it in a raised bed or somewhere where you can guarantee that that water's never going to sit on the crown.
And in those locations, you could put things like Joe Pye weed, which is a wetland. You could put a stilbe. I know globeflower, Trolleus europaeus. I'm trying to think of other things that like you want to put wet feet plants in there. Aruncus, I think the goat's beard type.
Yeah.
Anything that likes wet feet. And then almost 98% of the plants like it well drained.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying dry, but I'm saying well drained. It's kind of a death knell to most plants. But there are a few that love it, really love it. And those are the ones I would select.
Unfortunately, it's not wet enough to make a cardinal flower happy, I don't think.
That could be.
Cardinal flowers, when I've seen them in the wild, they've been in...
almost on the edge of a pond or in the side of the pond.
Is the great blue lobelia a little less...
Yes, it can grow roadsides, so you might try that.
You might try, if you don't mind blue instead of red, you might try that one instead.
I really like cardinal flowers, and
it's
I would
beautiful.
Like to be able to get them to grow, but there's only so much I'm willing to put into creating.
But if you have it so, you know, the water does drain to an area, you could even put in a pond or a hardscape that keeps the soil moist there. You could add a little more organic matter. You could try to do that, but I grow a stilbe where the water it actually runs to this one section of the garden, and if it's going to be moist, it's going to be moist there. So you might try to negotiate with your site and see if you can get some moisture. And then you'll probably have to, you know, a pond might be involved, a small one, but you might have to add a water feature.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions about gardening are invited this afternoon. Our guests today, Diane Noland, host of WILL-TV's Illinois Gardener, and Chuck Voigt, whose gardening interests include herbs and vegetables. Both of them are here at the University of Illinois in Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about gardening with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL, 333-WILL. Well, when the two of you came in this afternoon, you said, Celeste, if you have a moment in between phone calls, could we talk about sweet potatoes?
Let's do it.
Okay.
We're at that point.
As I was lying in my house recovering from bronchitis last weekend, I caught the rerun of last week's Illinois Gardener. And somebody called in with a question about purple sweet potato.
They said purple potato, I think.
Well, she said sweet potato.
Did she?
But
okay. All right.
But the first time she said purple sweet potato, and then in the course of the discussion, we went from sweet potato to potato and sort of back to sweet potato. And then my name got mentioned because when they got back to sweet potatoes, because I have quite a collection of them. So I thought we would, if we could, we'd quickly go through again the fact that it's unfortunate that potatoes and sweet potatoes both have potato in the name, because they're really not very closely related and really don't have that much to do with each other. The next thing is a potato is a tuber. It's a modified underground stem. The eyes on it are buds that would be on a stem. A sweet potato is a root, and it gets called a tuberous root, which, again, like potato, sweet potato is confusing. So I would just assume we didn't call it that. Let's just call it a big, fat storage root, and then we don't confuse the two. Because a sweet potato doesn't have buds on it. It makes adventitious buds fairly readily, but it is a root. Okay. So the purple one that has a purple skin and a purple flesh is, I think, Asian. At least I see it coming from Asia. Obviously, sweet potatoes are a Central and South American crop. But
and this lady had it from Hawaii.
had it in Hawaii, yeah. And wondered if she could get it here. And I would say yes, probably through Seed Savers or one of those kinds of organizations, you could find it. It's pretty easy to start sweet potatoes, you know, even though they don't have those preformed buds. When I do it in the greenhouse, I take medium-sized roots, lie them down horizontally in a deep flat so that they get covered with 3 or more inches of, I use 50-50 peat and perlite. You could use sand, whatever. Bed them, and then as the sprouts come up, they come out of the soil, they turn green, and you know they get several inches high, and below ground, they'll have those 3 inches where they have roots attached. And once it gets up to the size that you want to use, you can pull that right off of the root. And you have what we call a slip, which is just sort of like a rooted cutting. And you can plant that, and then the root will keep generating those as long as it has energy or until it gets a rot going in it. But you can harvest usually at least 2 or 3 crops of slips from the roots. So I'm not sure that there are a lot of restrictions on things coming in from Hawaii. I think they would be more touchy about things going
into Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
Right, as long as you don't have to stop in California, which is paranoid about everything. So if you can find a root of it, it would be very easy to
get
grow plants.
Get a lot of slips off of it.
Yes, a lot. Mm-hmm. And it, again, it varies from cultivar to cultivar, so I don't know how prolific that one is. I have some that you can plant one root that weighs 0.5 pounds and get 40 slips from it, and then others that are a little shyer, you might only get 8 or 10, but that's still quite a few. You know, and a lot of people have taken a sweet potato and put it in a glass of water and grown a sweet potato vine. It's pretty simple.
But the planting time is different because sweet potatoes are so tropical.
Right. They absolutely hate any kind of cool weather, so even around here, you're rushing the season if you get them in before Memorial Day.
So June, they're kind of like, treat them like basil. And
right.
Exactly.
And, there you go. Okay.
And mm-hmm. black plastic is a wonderful thing here so that you get the soil heated up under there so that they think they're in the tropics from the minute they go in. And then
keeps the weeds down. Oh, it's the berries.
And,
it's really good.
And we can grow I've grown now 66 or something varieties, and
you
can mature them here. Sweet potatoes are not that difficult here if you modify the environment so that they think they're tropical, and then if we have a summer like we did last summer when it was actually pretty hot, they do even better. You know, I had roots that were in excess of 5 pounds last year,
wow,
which is actually not all that commercially feasible, but
right.
you can certainly impress your friends.
Feed your family.
You can impress. Yeah, you have to carve it like the turkey at Thanksgiving.
Use it as a container.
Don't you can't cook anything else in the oven when you
no,
put that
you
in.
Couldn't.
My goodness.
And so the flesh is that beautiful orange. Then you've got the white ones.
Yes.
Which I don't know why you'd want white ones when you can have the beautiful orange. But anyway,
they were 150 years ago. The white ones were really the preferred one.
Interesting. Are they also yellow?
Yellow.
And then the purple, which we learned.
I've got purple skin with creamy flesh, and I've got purple with purple flesh.
Make some interesting potatoes.
Some really deep red skins.
Okay.
It's kind of funny because one of them comes from Maryland, University of Maryland colors are red and something, and the other one comes from Oklahoma, which...
And they're red.
They're also red. Although... I don't know. It's just.
But sweet potatoes are so good for you, and mm-hmm. you can grow them here.
Right.
Yeah. You can.
You can. Yeah, I've gotten 12 or more pounds per plant.
Wow. Drop that on by if
right.
you have some extra.
They're so good, too, and they're good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're great.
And there's all kinds of ways to prepare them that we don't think about. You know, we think about slathering them with brown sugar and marshmallows, and my retort to that is, if it needs that, then you could start with cardboard and get to the same place because it's got to be a pretty poor sweet potato if it needs that.
They're great slice and kind of like potato chips almost, but thicker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really
good. Yeah, and they're oven roasted. They're
mm-hmm.
good.
Scalloped sweet potatoes are very good. The white ones work fairly well for that because they have a drier, flakier texture, mm-hmm. more like.
That's
Irish
what I used.
Potato.
I did a scalloped potatoes in the oven with venison steak on top. It was really
that
very good.
That sounds good. Well, they're so easy to prepare, too. I mean, you put them in the steamer basket if you're in a hurry, and bam, they're done.
Right.
And then you just put a little bit of maple syrup on there.
Ooh,
perfect.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Are we hungry?
Yeah. We're going out for lunch after this, right?
We may have to.
Don't the volunteers have lunch here somewhere?
Well, let's talk with some more listeners. Next, we go to Champagne, a caller, a listener on line one. Hi. Caller on line one.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I've got two questions for you. I tuned in a little late, so you may have already answered these, and so I apologize. The first one, I have bulbs that have come up next to my house thanks to this gorgeous weather we've been having. They've peeked through, but they haven't bloomed yet. And I would love it if there's some way to get them to come up later in the spring and still bloom this year. Is there any way that they could still bloom this year? Or is it just a lost cause? I have to wave bye-bye to them and hope they come back next year.
It's probably the location near the foundation that has even sped up them coming up earlier because it stays a little warmer. And we've had a warm winter, spring. They are just going to sit. If it gets back cooler and we're having regular weather now for this time of year, they'll just sit. They will just remain stationary in that position, in that developmental place until it is warm enough. Now, if we get a few weeks that are quite cool, I mean, quite nice for this time of year, they may go ahead and flower early, but I'm not sure that that's the case. It really may not be.
But they probably won't die then. They may just actually just sit and then flower.
They will.
Later.
They are early bulbs. I mean, even daffodils, they're
mm-hmm.
early. They're used to it.
There's some daffodils and some crocus.
Right.
I have a few that haven't come up yet.
Yeah, worst case scenario, even when it's tragic, the flowers can freeze off, but the foliage doesn't, and the bulbs don't die. They just regenerate, and you lose that 1 year's bloom. But
And we're not to that stage yet.
Right.
Because
if you think it's going to be touch and go and you have some dry leaves or something, you could tuck mm-hmm. them in around them before we're going to have a cold mm-hmm. night. That might help slow things down a little bit.
And I was mentioning just adding a little bit of mulch. Are those mulched at all?
Yeah, they're pretty well.
Okay.
They're pretty well mulched in that.
That's why they're not up as much as the ones I had, because I realized the mulch had come off of mine and they were up 2 inches. So I mulched over the weekend. And if you really are concerned about it, you always want to save a few evergreen boughs. I always cut a few off of my Christmas tree. And those can be laid over as well as those dried leaves. But
oh,
you have to,
idea.
You'll want to spread them back out so that they're not covering the leaves. Or let them just come up through them.
Okay, I'll try that. I was just concerned because I love them every spring. You know, the side of my house is so pretty. And
that's right.
So I wanted to make sure that they didn't, you know, die or
yeah, it's
not
just
bloom.
Because we have had kind of an abnormal winter where we haven't ever really had much frost in the ground. If the ground is frozen, then they're stopped and nothing happens. But as soon as it warms up enough and the frost comes out of the ground, then they think, well, it's we need to develop,
yeah.
and they just start the progression. Whether
yeah.
it's late January or early March, they don't.
Okay,
but
seem
definitely
to tell
the difference.
They should just sit there and kind of wait.
They will, and I've even had early daffodils be completely encased in ice during an ice storm. It thawed out slowly. They continue to flower for 3 more weeks.
Oh, good. Okay. That's good news.
And that is the worst case scenario I've ever seen, ever. But they were, that ice storm we had, they were just encased perfectly, like jewels. It was really pretty. But they didn't die.
I've had daffodils get up where the buds had fallen down, and then it dropped down into the mid to low teens. And what usually happens then is that they, for some reason they freeze at the bottom of the stem, so they flop over and they kind of quit developing. And if that ever happens to you, if you pick them and bring them in and put them in warm water, they'll go ahead and bloom.
Oh, okay. Well, if that happens, I will try that.
Okay.
My other question is, in my backyard, I have this beautiful tree, which I just adore. I have no interest in cutting it down. But I would like at some point to grow some vegetables. And I can improve the soil quality, you know, and do a raised bed or whatever, but there's no sunshine back there, or very little. Do you have a recommendation for what vegetables grow best in very low sunlight? I mean, like, there's
generally leafy
patches,
things.
Leafy things. So there's a couple patches that get, you know, maybe a couple hours of sunlight, you know, day, but some of it just gets like almost no sunlight.
Right. If you're under 6 hours, probably you want to avoid the things that have to flower and set fruit. You want to do things that where you can actually eat the vegetative part of the plants, lettuces and maybe cabbages and those kinds of things. It's easier for a plant to grow foliage than it is to put together enough energy to go ahead and flower and make fruit and do all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So probably not tomatoes and peppers and those kinds of things.
Swiss chard, maybe.
Early crops.
Yeah, maybe.
Well,
so.
the trees
leaf out. That's
super
right.
Super early, yeah.
Radishes maybe could be slipped in with the, if it, peas. It is a deciduous tree, it loses its leaves. Is that correct?
The collar is gone.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
we're running down
is,
on time here.
Yeah. You could do it under that early season time when there's just branches and no leaves.
Okay. I'm going to take a gamble here. We're going to take one more call, the last person waiting for us
okay.
in Chicago, line 4, but we'll have to all be quick about it. Hi there.
Hi. I'll be quick. I was going through a Crockett's garden book, and he mentioned a Pearly Haworth, a plant that will grow on the windowsill, kitchen sink, or anything. Can you buy those mail order?
Do you know anything else about it? Pearly
no.
Haworth.
He said it was an odd plant, but it would grow anywhere.
I would search it online.
Online?
I would just put that in and search it. It's probably going to be an heirloom, antique-y, unusual.
And maybe check the index to make sure that he didn't give you a scientific name for it somewhere. That would certainly help.
Yeah. It would.
Are there any plant stores that send out catalogs?
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago.
Well, there's a lot of places that send out catalogs.
Uh-huh.
Not so much in Chicago.
But I'm not thinking exactly in that location.
Could you name one that I could go find through an 800 number?
Well, I'm thinking Burpee, Parks. Then you might want to do, I don't know about Seed Savers, if they have anything like that. Shumway, some of those places that have older varieties.
Johnny's,
yeah.
And you think on the Internet you could find that plant?
It's a possibility.
Uh-huh.
The more information you can, you know, if you could find a scientific name, it would really help. But you may just be able to type it in and get, you know, 60-70% of the hits that have no relationship to what you want, but all it takes is one or two that know what's going on.
I'm trying now, and I don't even know how to spell it because I put in Pearlie Hayworth, and I got smile contest.
Oh, boy.
Your Pearlies. So, yeah, probably the better you can narrow it down here, the better it's going to be. So
there has to be something else.
Yeah.
Jim Crockett was pretty good plantsman, so you might check it out. Maybe even follow it up with, you know, if he has an association or even...
Yeah. Call up the Morashes and see if they know.
Yeah, that's good.
WGBH in Boston.
Okay, well, good luck to that listener in Chicago. And to the two of you, thanks so much for doing this. And let's do it again.
Okay.
When we're not in a fun drive and we'll have more time.
All right.
How about that? Our guests this afternoon have been Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. And you can catch Diane on WILL-TV's Illinois Gardener, which airs on Wednesday evening, correct?
Thursday
tomorrow. Evening. Tomorrow, okay. Tomorrow at 7.
And tape re-air Saturday at 11.
Very good. Illinois Gardener, 7 p.m. Thursdays on WILL-TV. Thanks so much, guys. I'll let you slip out.
Okay.
Thank you. And then I'm going to check in now with Martha Diehl in Pledge Central. And Jay gave us quite a stirring rah-rah, get to the phones and call 244-9455 at the outset of this portion of the afternoon magazine. Martha, did we spur anybody to the phone this afternoon?
Well, we did indeed.
Good.
We did the one listener at a time, one caller at a time routine, and we appreciate it that people do call in, they take the time, and we need you to call in and make that pledge. If you're a student, senior, $25, basic membership, $40, the member card level, $75, is WILL, and for instance, what you just learned, worth $10 a month. That's $120 a year. Please call in and make that pledge, 217-244-9455.
Thanks, Martha. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's 1:54 Central Time. Let's find out what happened today on the Chicago Board of Trade, and maybe we'll take a look at some Kansas contracts as well. And standing by in the Ag office, Todd Gleason, he's going to give us those prices in just a moment, coming up in just a moment. In the meantime, let's bring you something else that you rely on here on AM 580, and that's weather information. And we were talking this afternoon right here in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine about gardening, and weather is certainly an important thing for gardeners. And it's while it's too early to be out there planting, you can be, as Diane said, out there in the garden. And if you're in the Champaign Urbana area, great day for it this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, the high 38. And tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear, the low 15. So it's still very much winter. Let's take a look at the forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon. In northern and central Illinois and west central Indiana, partly sunny. In southern sections and northern Indiana, cloudy with some snow showers. In east central Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered flurries. Highs ranging from 26 in northern Indiana to near 40 in southern Illinois. 5 minutes before 2 o'clock, 35 degrees in Urbana. Let's check in now with Todd Gleason.
Hi, Celeste. Good afternoon here. Henry was probably, who's running the board, was probably listening to me have a conversation with Diane. Wasn't sure that I was actually listening to you trying to come into me, but I was doing both. We were trying to figure out just exactly where this guy might go to look up that last question, and I was thinking that victoryseeds.com, and I think that's the right address, might be a good place for him to check. I picked up some Reed's Yellow Dent, which is open pollinated corn that started the whole process of hybrid corn eventually, and I found it there. So maybe that's a good opportunity. Let's check in at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Kansas City Board of Trade, where wheat futures are jumping this afternoon. In fact, in Kansas City, they were up 13¾ cents, 426¾ cents the settlement price, the high at 28, the low at 11. Wheat July contract for the Kansas City, and that's the harvest month there, 425 the high, the low again at $4.11. And the settlement price this time around in the July contract at 424¼, up 11¼. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, a nickel higher today, 359¼, the high, the low at 350½. Settlement price there at 356¾, once again up 5 for the day. May futures, 5.5 higher. The high at 70.5. The low at 61.5. Settlement price at 68.75. And July is 380. The high, the low at 371. July, your harvest month for the soft red winter wheat in Chicago at $3.78 at the end of this Wednesday afternoon, 5 cents higher. September futures 388.5. The high, the low at 81.5. Settlement price at 387, up 3.5. And December contract up 3.75 today. 399.5 the high, or rather the settlement price. From the corn pit, the March contract, 224.5 the high, the low at 217.25, settled at 221.25, up 3.25. In the May futures, 234.75 on the high, the low at 227.5, settled 232. They were up 3.5 today. July up 3.25, 243.25 the high, the low at 36. Settlement 3.25 higher for the July corn at $2.40.25. September futures 250.5 the high, the low at 43.5. Settlement price at 46.75 up 2. And the December contract, your harvest month, 259.5 the high, the low at 53.25. Settled 2 cents higher at 256.5. March oats 193 the high, the low at 84. Settlement price at 91.5 up 2.75. The May settled at 190.25. They were up 1.5 cents. Soy complex now. Nearby March soybeans 4 cents higher today, 582.5 the high. Low at 572, settlement price at $5.78, 4 higher. May futures 595.5 the high, the low at 585, settlement price at 591.25, up 3.25. And July wheat 606 the high, the low at 596, settlement price at 602.5, they were up 4. SEPs 608, the settlement price up 3 with a high of 611, a low at 605. And the November beans 618.5 the high, the low at 609, settlement price at 614. They were up 3 for the day. The March bean meal at 180.20 at the end of this day, 350 higher. The May bean meal at 182.60, up 310. The March oil 22.15, down 13. And the May oil 22.58, they were off 15 for the day. We'll take a look at how the numbers settled in the Mercantile Exchange at the moment and remind you that we'll talk with Paul Cooley at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock. I'm Todd Gleason.